Fireside Chat, and welcome to another recording of our episodes. I think today we're recording 142. I lost count, to be honest with you. I've been recording nonstop almost, it seems like, for the past 2 weeks. I do like two or three of them per day now. And so it's pretty interesting, the amount of voices and the amount of interest that this is generating. I didn't know that when I started 2 years ago, how this is going to turn out. You know, the good news is there's people listening. There's audience for this kind of podcasting. I hear a lot of wonderful stories coming out. In fact, ranked right now in the conversationalist sort of a podcast, number 10, I think, globally right now. This is not, you know, compared to any of the other ones that they try to push products out there or try to sell you vitamins or anything like that. And that's good news. We're averaging about 1,200 downloads per day. Things are really moving forward for the channel. You know, for those who are, and I see a lot of people out there who are trying to launch the podcast channel, if I give them one advice is persistent and be consistent with your content. And don't give up. You know, don't publish one every 6 weeks, a month. Try to be a little bit more consistent, more regular. Get the people to get used to you being on the air and listening to your conversation. So enough about that. Today, we are doing another podcast. I think Allison, first, I want to welcome Allison Fersh back. Allison and I, we do this once a year, this podcast once a year. We wrap up the year with this, and hence my Christmas background behind me. I was telling and Allison's dressed for the occasion, I guess. I see the Christmas scarf, Allison. Thanks for that. And I was telling Allison, this is not a virtual background. A lot of people don't know this is not a virtual background. Actually, this is my wall behind my desk here. But the reason we do these kind of conversation at the year end is to, A, check on each other. I haven't talked to Allison one-on-one for about a year. It's always nice to see you.
Likewise.
And to also recap what happened in the year and try to give a little bit of a light to what's going to come in 2026 down the road. So Allison, welcome again to the conversation.
Thank you. It's good to see you. Good to be here and back again. And, you know, I'm thinking, true, we didn't have this conversation for a whole year, but we did share the stage for a few minutes in Montreal at the CLIA conference. That was cool.
Absolutely. And it was wonderful to see you in Montreal. And I was going to get into that. One of the things I want to reflect on for 2025 as we get started with our conversation, again, it's an unscripted conversation, so we can go in any topics, in any direction, within reasons, of course. The event in Montreal, how Gala was instrumental in sort of like the hub, if you will, for the community of language industry companies, individuals, associations, etc. More of a center of the dialogue, at least from what I've seen in Montreal, and for the various events that Gala has brought to the community in 2025. So from your perspective, let's talk about Montreal. Montreal was great, I guess. I had fun with that, but I hope you did too. Let's talk about Montreal and the various, if you can recap Gala 2025 for us.
Gala 2025 was great. Whenever we host in North America, it usually is a smaller conference. And that's not necessarily a bad thing because you end up having a sense of intimacy and just a different feeling to the community. We had about 325 people from 32 countries, so it was still diverse, globally speaking. We had the keynote that achieved the highest ratings ever. It was Daniel Lamar, who's a longtime CEO of Cirque du Soleil, and he talked about creativity in business, and he talked about reinvention and resilience. And it was really cool. Obviously, Cirque du Soleil is an amazing brand. Everybody knows it. It's iconic. And to learn from him was cool. And he was just so inspiring. So that was a highlight, I would say, of the conference. And then what was also cool is that we coordinated with the Canadian Language Industry Association, and they hosted their summit on the day following our event. And so that brought a different subset of people, some of whom had been to the Gala conference, but it was cool to meet other people there too.
So it was great to combine the two together, the one after another. I think the same dates, I guess, almost one, not to overlap, but it was in sequence, Gala first, and then the World Speak from Canadian Language Industry Association, which I am the ambassador for World Speak 2026 this year as well. So I'll be promoting that on the podcast as we go forward along here. And we're promised by the team that it's going to be another flagship sort of a conference, hoping nice. That would be a success for us as well in Canada. The community continues to grow and continue to prosper. There is a lot more interest in the, I'm not sure if you're finding the same, but I'm finding a lot more interest now with people coming together to talk about their problems, their challenges, their future. I think when you're prosperous, when things are going well, everybody focuses on what they're doing. They're too busy. There are many things are going in the right direction, and they probably don't have enough time for those conversations, to participate in conferences or to attend specific dialogues on the industry. But now I'm seeing that a lot more people at a senior level exiting the office, going to a conference, participating in dialogues than I used to see before. I'm not sure if you've noticed that. Do you guys have that intuition or have data to support that or not?
Yeah, we do. We haven't had another big in-person event since the conference in Montreal. That one, like I said, was a little bit smaller than our European conferences. When we hosted in 2024, it was in Valencia, Spain, and we had over 500 people. We're going to host in Berlin. Maybe we can talk about that later, but next year, and we expect another big crowd. I think what you said is right. There's this desire for support and professional connection when you're struggling or when you're experimenting. And so having a community and a network that you can really depend on is more important now in times of hardship than it is probably in times of prosperity. And so we see a lot of, we had something like a 75% increase in attendance in our special interest groups this year. We had five of them running. Those are virtual meetings. And so that was a huge leap. We also had a huge leap in the attendance at Gala Academy, which is another virtual kind of a micro credentialing type program. There's not truly a credential at the end of it, but it's a very focused, like,
I remember we talked about that one in the last recap. You were launching it, I think.
Yeah, it went very well this year. Three of them, we hosted three of them, and they all focused on something a little bit different. So I would say, yes, you're right. Your observations can be supported, substantiated with actual attendance data, at least in our case.
Oh, absolutely. Now, for 2025, I mean, the industry have seen a lot of conversations, a lot of changes. Some people are ahead of the change, you know, trying to figure out that reimagining their business, as Lamar would say from Cirque du Soleil. And also some people are in three categories. One, trying to invent the business. One is trying to make the absolutely necessary changes so they can sustain it. And the third category probably is saying, it's not my turn yet. I'm happy with the customer cluster that I have. I don't need to do much at this point. I'm not sure if you've, from the changes that you've seen in the industry in 2025, can we talk a little bit about that from your perspective? What's your highlights from changes in 2025 for the industry?
It's been a struggle, I would say, for a lot of the smaller companies. Very small language services companies have been struggling to make the change. And I want to be clear that it's not for a lack of desire or will. It's really just a lack of resources generally, and occasionally a clear direction or a framework for the change. I would say the medium-sized companies are having a better time adapting. They're still small enough to be nimble, but they're big enough to have some resources. Funny enough, some of the biggest companies that like you might know this, but that have tons of resources are a little bit more like an aircraft carrier when it comes to change. So it's harder to pivot, even if they've got the vision for it, which most of them do. And so I would say you outlined three buckets, and I would say we don't see that many in that last bucket, which is to say folks that are like, it's all good, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. If that's the case, they're probably planning on exiting the market, retiring, you know, in the next 2 to 3 years, because that's not sustainable. And I think most folks know that.
So if you were to put a label on 2025, what would that be, Allison?
As a singular label, boy, I'm not that good at coming up with things on the spot like that.
It doesn't need to be a single label, but just a sentence. Are we still going through that transformational?
Yeah. I think you've heard people who know about the hype cycle of, let's talk about AI, because that's what it's about. They say that we're now in the trough of disillusionment, which I think is really funny. But what that means is that you're beginning to get real about expectations. I think we're not there yet. I think some enterprises and clients still have unrealistic expectations for when it comes to language. But you've now got folks that are starting to have a clearer sense of direction and purpose, maybe beginning to understand the paths that are in front of them, you know, whether or not they're going to become specialists in a particular, you know, service or a particular vertical, whether they're going to, how they're going to change their portfolio. So I would say, you know, again, we're still in that evolutionary adaptive stage, except I'm sensing a little bit more optimism than this time last year.
You know, there are a few factors that are driving all this besides technology, right? We talk about technology all the time, and I'm getting a bit of an AI fatigue, to be honest with you. Every time I look at a post, or every time somebody sends me an email, every time I have a conversation, it's all about AI. It feels like, and I had a conversation, which I haven't, well, actually I posted it, with a gentleman out of New York who is a writer for one of the major entertainment companies in the US, Marvel, etc. So anyway, I agree with him, Victor Vernado, his podcast is up on the channel. I agree with him. He calls AI a utility. So imagine having, you know, your electricity, you plug your electricity, your lamp work, you know, the computer turns on, etc. We're going to get to a point where AI is a utility. You plug your application in it, off you go. It works. But we're not there yet. Obviously, I mean, I'm not sure if we're striving to get there or not. We talk a lot about a quantum computing that is the solve everything, I guess, from a processing power. Supercomputing is going to help us process more. But the idea here is that with all that said and done, there is another trend that is taking place, which is economical, geopolitical, all that stuff that is driving some of that. Example, you know, I hate to say that, but because I've said it in multiple times, is that when you, for instance, as the U.S. set their English language as the language of the country, nothing wrong with that. Any country can set their language the way it wants to. But that would probably impact some of the suppliers in the country who are used to deal with having the ability to deliver services in multiple languages through the federal government or through any government, I guess, for that matter. So there are many of those out there, right? So I have no idea. I did talk to a few suppliers from the U.S. and they said it's impacting them. But I don't know the general lay of the land. So what do you think of the geopolitical stuff and the economic impact on our industry?
It's real, for sure. You know, you've got something like that, which certainly impacts providers in the U.S. I think you also have the impact of the U.S. tariff debacle, which, you know, it changes every week. So that makes global business, especially in certain verticals, you know, manufacturing and distribution and any, you know, of those industries impacted by the tariffs, that's definitely had a chilling effect. I think that we have a global economic, you know, if not recession, then uncertainty. The war in Ukraine is still going on. I think countries are messing around with interest rates. I've recently had a lot of communication with universities, and practically every university that I'm talking to is telling me about dwindling budgets. I mean, someone that I spoke with in Argentina this week was saying that the Argentinian universities are actually trying to sue the government because they're failing to deliver on their agreed upon contractual budgets. So yeah, it's apart from AI, there's these other factors or environmental pressures, if you will, you know, wreaking havoc,
yeah,
at least having an impact.
Yeah, everything, you know, it's just, I think just because the way the industry sits in the cycle of business and the cycle of economy, you know, we're not at the front end of it. We're at as a consequence, as an industry, because, you know, if a policy is being written somewhere, you know, we may get involved, or a contract being written somewhere, or anything, or a website being created somewhere, we may get involved at the end of that. Not at the front end of it. We're designing, et cetera. We're translating it, localizing it, et cetera. That's an endemic, I guess, of who we are as an industry. And it's been always like this. We always strive to go up the food chain a little bit, like the salmon migration. And we'll see how that goes. But is that something you agree with, or you disagree with? I see you nodding your head there.
Well, I mean, it's the truth of the matter, but it's disappointing and frustrating. And I do think that we're beginning to see a gradual shifting left of localization, in part because of the changing expectations at the top. And so I think that's encouraging. What we're seeing are some folks that are becoming more engaged at the earlier cycles, and then the localizers are having to have this almost cross-disciplinary approach. I just did a a call or a podcast with Scott Abel, who is like a content management and technical writing guy. And we were talking about the intersection and kind of the overlap of technical documentation and localization, and imagine how great it would be if localization came into the process earlier in terms of like terminology and style guides. And again, if we can figure out how to persuade people that localization is actually the biggest unused growth lever, then companies might start paying attention. But we could talk about that later if you want. But I think AI is impacting how localizers are doing their work. And it's meaning that they have to be involved in orchestrating workflows earlier than they used to, maybe having a longer life cycle.
Now, on the integration of AI, which, you know, always on the front, although we, you know, we've talked about it enough, but I guess we're going to continue talking about it, I guess, as an industry, not on this podcast, as an industry, because the question regarding AI adoption, the state of AI adoption in our industry changes on a day-to-day basis, depends on who we talk to and how much time has been gone through and what is the impact. So when people normally move, not because they want to move, either they see a train coming at the end of the line there and they have to make a move or stand in the way of the train. And the other part of it is if we don't do anything, as you mentioned earlier, you may be in the category of exiting the business. So what is the state of AI adoption now in 2025, in your opinion?
We did a survey early in the year. We called it like AI and automation, and we were trying to understand what was happening. I don't have that in front of me right now, but it was very high. You know, something like 50% of the respondents were using it regularly, mostly with language related tasks and less so with other tasks. But what we've seen as the year has gone on is more use of agentic AI and kind of orchestration of workflows that are multi-step workflows. You said it's a utility, and I agree with that. I think another way to think about it is it can be used almost like a junior professional could be used, especially agentic AI. You know, it's going to get better with training. It's going to get better with time. It can do certain things now, but it's not very good at a lot of things, just like a junior or entry-level professional would be. And I think that's the way people should be thinking about it. It's not a panacea. It's not a silver bullet. It's not set it and forget it. And honestly, I'm kind of happy to see some people back, you know, walking it back. Like we heard, for example, you know, Klarna, you know, had laid off a ton of its language and localization staff and inevitably ended up hiring them back. And I think that's going to be the truth of it. And, you know, I like talking about the humans more than talking about the AI. So we could do that if you want, but we can move on from AI if you
absolutely.
Like.
Absolutely. And this is my next topic. It's going to be like, we've heard a lot of layoffs in 2025, major company laid off people, medium-sized company laid off people. And people can, you know, create anything they want in terms of publicly facing excuses as to why. But the fundamental is lack of revenue, predominantly lend you or cash flow issues, you know, think about laying off people. Now, on the human aspect, I mean, from where you stand, from where you sit in your position, what's your comments on the layoff situation in 2025? You mentioned one company had to rehire them back. Is that a trend or is it one off or where are we at?
The rehiring is not a trend. I hope it will become a trend. I hope we're going to see that next year. And I have a feeling, you know, I'm going to have a little schadenfreude if some stuff goes poorly and they realize what a mistake they made. It's just that, so I don't know. Surely it's a revenue thing. I think in the case of companies that have private equity investment, for example, and they just simply have to make the numbers work. That could be like they think of it as a low-hanging fruit. Of course, we don't think of it that way. We think of it as high value. And by the way, you're cutting off your growth levers. And no, you know, DeepL, as great as it is, it can't substitute for a team of people. It can handle the language piece of it, the translation piece of it reasonably well, but that's just a small part of what those humans are doing for companies. So yeah, I mean, it's true. The layoff is definitely a trend. We've seen that. And I certainly hope that rehiring in kind of a reorganized way is going to be a trend next year, but I'm not going to like call it.
You're not calling it right now?
No.
You're not hedging your bets on that one? Okay.
No, I'm like, you know, hoping.
Did anything shift significantly, and you probably noticed it more than anything else in your scan through the industry in terms of vendor landscape, talent impacts, competencies, mergers and acquisitions that you probably think, oh, wow, this is, I didn't expect that. This is happening. What was the mergers and acquisition like picture? I guess let's start with that one.
I understand. I've talked to a couple of people that are in that space, and I understand that it's actually picked up a bit and become a little bit more lively. I think the challenge is if you're going to be a company that's attractive, then there's got to be something unique about you. You either need to have some pretty interesting clients. You need to have some pretty interesting capabilities. You know, your run of the mill kind of translation agency that we saw 10 years ago, that's not that attractive unless there's something unique about them. But those companies, there's an appetite for the merging or for the acquiring, because that's the way you basically get more resources to do more adaptation and pivoting or experimentation. So that's been, you know, it's been picking up, I would say.
And from the private equity firms, are they still heavily active in our industry, or where are they now?
I'm not sure, but I don't think, from what I've heard, they're not quite, it's not like 2 to 3 years ago when they were really going after like language technology companies heavily. I think that's slowed down a little bit, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah. And we've talked a little bit about that one. That whole topic of ethics and using technology the way it's being used, it comes in and out from different dialogues. What's your understanding of ethics in AI in our industry? Like, where are we with this whole ethics discussion? What's, you know, in Canada we call it jurisdictional data. You know, I want to make sure that the data stays in country. I want to make sure I put some walls behind it or in front of it so people don't get to it. Unnecessary, we don't get access to it, et cetera. So.
Yeah, they think that there's a growing awareness of the risks, and it's really it really depends country by country. Like the US is the Wild West, and I have a feeling we'll probably pay for it later. That's where I'm based. I think that like we look in Germany, for example, which has a traditionally very strict and rigorous data protection. Mm-hmm. And they have a much slower adoption or more cautious adoption. You know, the EU passed, and I forget the number of it, but they passed a, you know, sort of an AI and ethics mandate this year. So those countries have to comply with that. And that meant making some changes. I was in a webinar a couple of weeks ago where they were talking about how some companies are actually moving from the cloud back to on-premise servers because of the risks and this priority for data sovereignty. Really, because even if you sign an agreement with OpenAI, you're going to use their tools. Apparently, I haven't read all the fine print, but there are some risks in there. And so, I mean, that's just one component of ethical use is kind of data privacy, intellectual property protection. I think one area where localization people are ahead of the curve is understanding bias and really trying to work on making AI and large language models as unbiased as possible. That's an afterthought, or it's not even a thought for plenty of other people. But because language experts and linguists have thought about this from the get-go, you know, they're thinking about bias in these large language models and addressing that. So mm-hmm. I applaud them, us, the industry, for that.
I call it the rise of the SLM, the small language models.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people are thinking about small language models where they can run it their own.
Yeah.
Behind their own, lock and key firewalls kind of thing. And it feels to me that's the appropriate approach versus throwing it up in the ether and hopefully nobody catches it kind of thing in terms of privacy, in terms of sensitive data that it filters its way out. I know the data is parsed, but it doesn't matter. You still have few elements of that data that finds its way into the neural network of distribution, and you may not want that as a service provider. Now, let's move to 2025. What's your reading on 2025? Sorry, 2026.
2026. I feel like, so let's start kind of with the emotional standpoint. I think that there's a little bit more optimism. I think that people are starting to feel like, okay, we can do this. I kind of get the lay of the landscape. I understand some pathways that are open to me. I understand the direction that I want to move. You know, uncertainty is not a bad thing necessarily. I think folks feel better when they have a sense of direction and purpose. And I believe that that's what's happening now, is that there is a clearer sense of direction and purpose. And yet they know that there's still a lot of work to do. So in general, I would say we're feeling kind of optimistic about 2026. You know, like I said, the hype cycle is getting to that place. I don't have all those stages memorized, but I'm curious what the name of the next phase is after the trough of disillusionment. I'm sure somebody could tell me.
Somebody will send us a comment on that one. Now, in terms of the gala members for 2026, what can they expect?
Well, we've got a couple new things going for 2026. One big bit of news is that we rebranded our annual conference and we're now calling it the World Ready Conference. I think for a variety of reasons, calling it the Gala Conference wasn't serving, you know, think about that from an SEO perspective. There's a lot of galas happening around the world. So World Ready also reflects what we're aiming and what we're aiming to do. We want our people to be world ready. We want products to be world ready. The technology needs to be world ready. So essentially World Ready encompasses, you know, the sense of mission of our companies and departments and professionals. So the World Ready Conference has a couple of cool tracks: tech ready, market ready, risk ready to focus on some compliance and regulation issues, language access ready, and I'm missing one, tech ready. I can't remember if I said that. So the conference will be quite similar in the way it's constructed. The focus is meant to be more cross-disciplinary. It's meant to be really practical, to focus on what does it mean, practically speaking, right now to be those things? So that's one cool thing for 2026, I think.
Oh, that's very cool. I mean, that whole rebranding is terrific. I mean, I was just always thinking like gala, I'm thinking champagne, but here you go.
I know. Yeah. You and half the internet. I think that the other really big deal is that we are adapting our membership model to try to be more flexible and meet people where they are in this changing ecosystem. So Gala's always been a trade association, which means that membership was open only to companies. And now we're going to become a hybrid or a combined association, and we're opening membership to individuals also.
Wow, great.
And so what we like about that is that we could potentially reach more people who identify as localizers, whether or not they're sitting at an enterprise company, at some kind of a managed services company, at a language services company. You know, we just want to find the people that are dealing and owning and driving multilingual communication and bring them into the professional community at Gala. So that'll start in January with a couple different models, including student membership too, which is hopefully, it's pretty darn affordable, I think, for a lot of the world, maybe not all markets, but we want to talk to the incoming professionals too.
And you said the prerequisite for individual members are?
There's really no requirement other than an interest in, and most likely a professional role in, something that's dealing with multilingual communication. It could be global UX and UI. It could be international product development, who really wants to think about how do I incorporate language from the get-go, because this is going to be a global product and we want to be smart from the beginning. It could be any of those folks.
And what's your personal goals for 2026?
I have a lot of goals that are going to be sort of internal for the staff. We're working on the annual plan now, and there's a couple of strategic pillars that will be our guiding lights, our principles that, and my goals specifically. So we want to grow our reach. We want to reach more people in kind of more adjacent professions, let's say. I have a phrase that I'm trying to get the staff to embrace called automate the grind. And I want to automate the grind, because we have a small team. We do a lot and we need to be smarter about using technology ourselves. So automate the grind is a big one for us, and other factors and dimensions of operational excellence. So, I mean, look, we're a nonprofit association, but nonprofit is not a business model. Revenues are important to us so that we can reinvest them in programming and deliver cool programming. And so, you know, we want to just make sure that we have a healthy revenue stream that comes primarily from membership and the conference. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that we're delivering a lot of value, because people don't have to engage with associations. We think they should, and we think there's a ton of ROI in doing that, but we want to convey that really clearly. So I'll stop there. I mean, I don't know if you—that's what you were getting at, you know, in terms
of
my personal goals. But yeah,
one thing we did not touch on, which we touched on last year, I just remembered the conversation. I guess the research part, and you mentioned you've tested the idea last year. You had a report, and you put something out. How is the research side of Gala? Is this going to go anywhere, or
yeah,
are you going to move on?
No, we just need to adapt it, actually. So what we discovered is that the problem, I'll just be blunt, you know, nobody wants to read a 30-page report. And that's what we created. And that's a mistake in today's, you know, goldfish attention span environment. So we still think that there's a lot of value in asking the community the questions about automation, about technology implementation and budgets and all the things that we ask. We just need to present the findings in a way that's more consumable and more readily consumable. Like I said, not going to require someone to look at a 30-page report full of cool charts. We're going to try to figure out how to maybe spoon feed them some of those findings a little bit better. And we won't necessarily repeat the same topics because the importance of those topics is changing and they kind of rise and just like the sun, you know, they rise and then fall, sunset. Moving on, what's next? What's the most important thing that people care about right now?
Is that goldfish attention span? You know, if your post stays at the top of the feed for 30 seconds, you're lucky and that's it.
Yeah.
What would success look like for you in 2026?
Some of our big success metrics are going to be conference attendance and membership and whether membership. Or not people are interested in this individual membership model. We have some fairly modest goals because we know it's going to take a while to roll out that information and communicate mm-hmm. it to everybody. Conference, you know, I'd love to see more than 500 people in Berlin. When we hosted in Munich in 2019, we had 500. I think, you know, Germany has a lot of localization people. What I don't like about Germany is VAT. There's 21%, 21%, 19% VAT. Yeah. On top of, so you set your, you know, you set your registration rates.
Can you reclaim that back or no?
Yeah, companies can. Individuals, as I understand it, cannot. But if a company pays for their staff person to attend, they can reclaim the VAT. So that's helpful.
So yeah. Our hope for Berlin is 500 attendees, right?
500 attendees would be awesome. And then I don't know what we've set a few targets already for individual memberships, and it's probably modest, like maybe 50 memberships over the course of the year. But TBD, we'll see how that goes. That's what success would look like. I think, you know, a well-oiled machine internally amongst the Gala staff. We had we brought in a new staff member in 2025, and we had one other person completely change roles. So it's been a year of just a lot of newness, and I want next year to feel a little bit more in the groove and settled in. So that would be a kind of an operational goal for me.
And for the... You mentioned you have interest in the human. So for the human side, global industry, is there any initiatives, any global, I want to say programs?
Yeah.
That you're probably going to be putting out there in 2026 to support the people that runs our industry.
And exactly.
There's plenty of them out there.
So going back to what you said about, you know, AI as a utility, look, we can't escape it. It's there. It's part of the fabric. It's going to be just part of the tool set. And so we've got three Gala academies that are focused on using AI in particular roles. So one mm-hmm. of them is going to be in project management, for example. I think that's the big question when it comes to the people is what are the new roles going to be as this evolution continues? And how do we prepare people to succeed in those new roles? Because they're going to need some new skills, maybe different perspectives, maybe different connections with new stakeholders. So we want to kind of anticipate what those new roles are going to be and then prepare people for success there.
Because from where you stand from an association point of view or from a global association point of view, you have a bigger visibility in what's going on industry-wide versus most of the individual normally involved in their day-to-day job. They know it from their local presence, I guess, right? So they don't know beyond that. And I guess to a large, I shouldn't be saying that. To a large extent, they do, but not to the depth of a specialized association such as yourself will bring to the table in terms of that awareness of what else is possible. For instance, one of the things in Canada we're pushing for right now is the opportunity to broaden our horizon as an industry outside of Canada. And that conversation started last year. So look for other markets. I mean, this is something we did not cover. A lot of companies are covering, like they would say, oh, we're a global vendor. We provide translation everywhere. Yeah, there are those, but there are others who are very, I want to say, county specific, city specific, you know, province in Canada specific. Mm. Or country specific, and they probably could do better if they decided to establish a foothold somewhere else outside.
Yeah.
And what tends to happen in an ecosystem that you're used to is you develop good knowledge in some cases, you develop a lot of learning, but and that you can use outside. In a lot of cases, what happened, you develop stagnation as well.
Yeah. I think in the case you just described, those are the folks that are primed for, you know, partnering and potentially merging, you know, with other companies. That's obviously one way to grow. I would say the other thing we didn't talk about is this cultural expertise. So when we think about the role of the human in an AI augmented workflow, you know, where does the human bring value?
Yeah.
Well, the human brings value in orchestration. Like I said, that junior professional doesn't have any clue how to orchestrate a complex workflow nor connect the dots. So that's one key thing for humans to do. The other thing is applying judgment. So think about having to make trade-offs in things like quality and like the age-old question, you know, quality, turnaround time, and cost. Like who's making that decision? A human is. And then when it comes to cultural relevance and resonance and sensitivity and what's going to succeed in a particular culture, you know, that's AI is not good at that yet. And so I think that's another place that a human could apply or insert value into the chain.
And there is the understanding here that AI, it is advancing not equally on all language combinations. That's for sure.
Totally.
When we talk about AI advancement, generally people focus on the top five languages and that's it. Below that, below the 5-10 languages at the top of the food chain, you know, your typical, the figs and the usual Asian languages. But once you go below that, it's starting to get thin in terms of the how powerful the AI is within those languages. And you bring a very good topic, which is we didn't have a chance to cover, is that whole cultural aspect and cultural nuances and history and tradition and the way community communicates with each other, right? So, you know, you're not going to be able to take a tradition that's, say, in Saudi Arabia that is probably 10,000 and encapsulate it into ones and zeros. I don't know how that's going to happen. Because there's a lot of nuances to how you say things and the way you say things. And it may sound, it may read correctly, but you will be upsetting a lot of people. And I say that because I experienced.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I think that that's the kind of thing that is not understood at the top. And that's a huge risk. It's a huge risk.
100%. So as we come to a close, what is your message to the global localization community as we close out the year?
Know your value, figure out how to communicate your value to all of your stakeholders, embrace change, and be part of a community who's working and struggling on the same things that you are. Because that community, it sounds cheesy, but that community can lift you up. It can save your bacon, if you all know that expression. And it can just be an incredible resource for you as you navigate the change. That's it.
Excellent. What a good message to leave with. You know, they say rising tide lifts everybody, right? So, and that's where we need to aim at as a community. And to that end, from myself, Robin Ayoub, and Alison Furch, Executive Director of Gala, I want to wish everybody an excellent Christmas. I hope this Christmas will be a good one for everybody, safe, happy, healthy for everybody. And I want to wish you guys a beautiful 2026 in the coming year. So I really appreciate your time, Alison, being with
here,
me.
Here, here.
Good to see you.
Likewise. Thanks for having me, Robin.
Anytime. And I'll see you guys at the next episode. Alison, hang on one second, okay?
Yep.